we are in the middle of our winter season right now, so there's some programs on the table with snacks. So I hope you, if you haven't already, pick up a snack, pick up a program, and come back to see a show this season or next. I'm really excited to have all of you here for an info session about this grant that the Durham Foundation is offering. This is the inaugural year, and it's a really amazing opportunity for artists. So I'm excited to hear about it, and I'm thrilled that you're all here to hear about it as well. And I'm excited to introduce Ben Cameron of the Durham Foundation. And the Durham Foundation is great. They have been instrumental to Roulette for a long time in providing funding that Roulette then uses for residencies and commissions for emerging artists. So we are excited about this opportunity for artists who are already part of the Roulette community, but of course for artists beyond it as well. So welcome. And
Thanks. My name is Ben Cameron. I'm the president of the Durham Foundation, and thank you all for giving me your time tonight and showing up for this. I'm going to just sort of lay the program out. It'll take me probably 20 minutes to do, and then we'll take Q&A as long as you want to do it. I know you all have busy lives. I don't feel disrespected or anything. If you want to leave at any point, you should go when you want to go. Don't feel like that's an embarrassment. But in addition to the program announcements, there are also cards there that will remind you of our website and how to get the guidelines, et cetera. So if you haven't gotten one of those yet, you might want to pick that up. First of all, I want to bring greetings from the rest of our staff, Eleanor Savage, who some of you may know if you've been dealing with us before, and our board members, who include in New York, Elizabeth Streb, the choreographer, Mark Tribe, the visual artist, Linda Earl, who runs the visual arts program here, in addition to, who am I leaving out? I'm leaving out somebody, don't tell them I did. Daniel Alexander Jones. Daniel Alexander Jones, the performance artist who's about to open in Blacklight at the Public. So on behalf of them as well, thank you. The Jerome Foundation is named for Jerome Hill. Jerome Hill was born to a wealthy family in St. Paul, Minnesota, but he spent his creative life in New York. He started out as a theater practitioner. He did his college studies at Yale, where he got a degree in music composition. He went off to fight with the French resistance in World War II, and while there became a painter, then a photographer, then a filmmaker. If you ever come to visit us in our offices in St. Paul, Minnesota, we'll let you hold his Academy Award, which he won for Best Documentary in 1957 for a film on Albert Schweitzer. And then he became an experimental filmmaker, hanging out with Warhol, et cetera, in the 60s before he passed away in 1972. In many ways, our foundation pays homage to his legacy. It funds only in the state of Minnesota and the five boroughs of New York, Minnesota where he was born, New York City where he spent his creative life. And when we say five boroughs, we mean five boroughs. No White Plains, no Newark. I used to live in Maplewood, New Jersey. No Maplewood, et cetera. It's the five boroughs specifically. It also pays tribute to him by supporting emerging artists, which was a special passion of his in his lifetime, in virtually all disciplines. And so our mission, as we see it, is to contribute to a dynamic society by supporting emerging / early career artists. And I'm going to say more in a minute about what that is. And recently we clarified our core values, what we stand for, and what we hope artists we support will stand for as well on at least one of these. And they are as follows. Number one, our first core value is diversity / equity. We're trying to get more precise about that language. Diversity for us means we fund a diversity of art forms, a diversity of points of view. Obviously, there's diversity in the state of Minnesota and New York, et cetera, but we are taking very seriously funding in an equitable manner. Our second core value is innovation / risk. Typically, we fund artists who are pushing at the edge of the art form a little bit. And then our third core value, which really surprises people the most, is humility. And by humility, what we mean by that is, as a foundation, we believe artists know more about what they need than we know, and therefore our job is to listen to artists and to respond to the agenda that artists define. But it also means that the kind of artists that we fund are those who see themselves either in a larger aesthetic tradition or in direct connection to a particular community and see their place either aesthetically or community and live in a kind of service or acknowledgement of that landscape. So by contrast, if your life's ambition is to move to Hollywood, make $1 million and win the Oscar, God bless you and we hope you succeed. That kind of ego drive or that kind of self-fulfillment drive, absent that aesthetic or community link, just means you probably fall wide of the artists who are our priority. When I arrived at the foundation in 2016, which has been just 2 years ago, we entered a long-range planning process, and we did it by launching an online survey. And 600 organizations and 1,600 artists responded, and we believe that this program I'm going to share with you tonight is the fruit of what we think we heard from the artists and the organizations. So I'm going to start by saying, first of all, what did we hear? The first thing we heard was, people that looked at Jerome said, the greatest thing you do is you help emerging slash early career artists make new work, even while none of us know what an emerging or an early career artist actually is. There was wild disagreement about how to define an early career or emerging artist. And so when we say in literature, for example, how do you define an emerging artist? The first respondent would say, well, if you haven't published a book, you're not far enough along to ask for money. And the next artist will say, if you've published a book, you're too far along and you shouldn't be able to ask for money. And virtually in every discipline, there was a wide variation of beliefs. But emerging early career artists, but you wanted clarity. Secondly, we heard artists and organizations say, we need multi-year support. Often the grants we get are for finite periods of time and we've hardly started on a project already. We've got to raise the money to keep it going. We also heard we need more significant levels of support than many programs offer. Next, we heard artists say, we love intermediary programs, but we want to be able to talk to you directly at Jerome. We wanted an avenue to apply directly to you. We heard deadlines and calendars are helpful because they help us to plan. We heard artists say that they were interested in working in new ways. And finally, we heard that a lot of the way we had run our programs before were burdensome and excessively bureaucratic. So, putting all that together, here's how we are responding to this. Number one, what do we mean by early career slash emerging artists? Our priority in funding are what we call vocational generative artists. And I'm going to pick that apart for a minute. By vocational, what I mean is, I totally understand, especially relatively early in your career, your artwork is unlikely to be your major source of income or be your complete source of income. So it doesn't mean that that's where your money's coming from, like the IRS would say. But what we believe is your orientation is you want to make serious pursuit of the arts your lifelong vocational calling. That's where you're oriented. So if this is a pastime for you, if it's a hobby for you, if it's something you want to do on the side, on occasion, again, God bless. Our priority is people with that vocational aspiration for the arts to be in the center of their lives. Secondly, when we say generative artists, we are funding the artists who are responsible for calling the work into being, and we distinguish between a generative artist and an interpretive artist. So in dance, a generative artist is the choreographer. An interpretive artist is a dancer. In film, the director is the generative artist, the actors and the editors are interpretive artists, etc. So it's the primary force in calling the work into being and the one who has the ultimate creative control over the final shape of the work. Our artists typically have the following characteristics. Their work is imaginative, it shows sign of being rigorous. There's a level of technical proficiency or craft. There's a distinctive vision. There's an authentic voice or evidence of an emerging voice. There is both evidence of aesthetic engagement and experience. There's risk-taking, which I've mentioned before. And again, there's at least the willingness to explore the edges of the form, even if you decide, having explored, you want to fall back to something more conventional. But you're at least in that sort of challenging sphere. And then in some way, by your presence, there's the potential that not only you'll come to full fruition as an artist, but you'll help the field in which you work expand their vision for what might be possible in their field. Again, as I've said, we fund only in Minnesota and New York, and typically as well for early career, here are the other issues. Number one is, we say if you went to school, and we don't expect you to have gone to school, but if you have decided to train formally, we expect that you have graduated at least 2 years ago and that you have produced or created at least 2 post-student works that you have of significant length that you have exhibited, published, or presented to a public. Now, partly because our resources are small, if you're a student, if you've only got one work, if you're at work on your first work, we hope you will stick with it and we hope that you'll meet the criterion and come back. But quite frankly, as many of us know, certainly my age, we went to school with a lot of people who have, after a year or two, said, God, this isn't for me. This is a brutal life. I don't have the stamina for it. I don't have the commitment for it. I found other things that are going to pay me more. And so with our limited resources, we want to prioritize those people who have been in the field long enough that they show some stamina and some stubbornness, and they're going to stick with it, at least intentionally, for the foreseeable future. So again, at least 2 years out of school and two works of significant duration already completed and released to the public. That's to get to the door to knock. At the other end of early career or emerging artist, there are clear moments where if you get these things, you've gone too far. If you get the MacArthur, God bless you, you are past us. If you get the Doris Duke, you are past us. If you get multiple grants from MAP, you are past us. In a sense, what we're looking for is that sweet spot in an artist's life between just starting out in their early career, but having some legs under them and some skin in the game, and yet not so far along that there's a regular economic path of self-sufficiency and recognition that helps you just continue to move forward. You know, it's a very vague description, we know, but somebody said interestingly the other day, you know, one of the things that she thought about, which I continue to mull about, is emerging artists typically work primarily in a single community. Maybe that means a geographic community, maybe it means a cultural community. And one of the signs that maybe you're going past emerging is when you have regular opportunities beyond that one community. You're getting regional or national work on a regular basis. You're getting work in other communities culturally than your own. That's a sign that you're beginning to push the parameters for us a little bit. Similarly, she said, you know, when you're an emerging artist, you want mentorship. You need to turn to people who have been in the business for a while. When suddenly you find yourself in the position that you're giving that advice to others, maybe that's a signal that, boy, you know, you're starting to move a little further on. All that said, in the application, I'll probably say this again, there is a moment, if you have any doubt, that early in the application, we ask all applicants, why should we consider you emerging? And so if you've got a significant resume, you can make your case. If you feel like you're not quite up to the starting line, you can make your case. We use panels to adjudicate this, and it'll be up to the panel whether they buy your argument or not, but at least you have the opportunity to say to a panel of professionals in your discipline, this is why I think I fit the emerging category. Okay, so that's, first of all, the guidance on early career and emerging. Secondly, you said you wanted more flexible support and you wanted more significant support. And the flexibility is really at the heart of this program. And you wanted supportive significance. So here's the headline. This fellowship program will offer all grantees two-year grants of $20,000 per year, so a total of $40,000 over 2 years, unless the artist asks us with a compelling reason why they need less. Now, most people sort of think, why would anybody say that? But we are aware that there are artists who may live in public housing, there are artists who have medical subsidies, there are people that for life reasons, if your income hits a certain level, you can lose that housing, you can lose that medical care, and knowing that this is only a two-year grant, we don't want to endanger your life circumstances by inadvertently giving you too much money. So if there are real practical, pragmatic reasons that you say, I can't accept $20,000, we're happy to have that conversation. But unless you have that circumstance, you'll be getting $20,000 a year for 2 years. In addition, secondly, you said you need flexible support. And again, flexibility is at the heart of this program. The IRS requires that any grant we make, an artist can show us that it has contributed to their professional development, their creative development, or their career advancement. And so whatever you do with our money, we have to be able to tie back to one of those impulses. But within that, we are going to be as flexible as we can be. So yes, you can use the money to make new work. Yes, you can use the money to travel to do research. Yes, you can use money to rent studio space. Yes, you can use money to hire collaborators. Yes, you can use money to attend conferences. Yes, you can use the money to go to retreats. Yes, you can purchase equipment. Yes, you can fly in agents to see your work if that's going to be helpful, or other presenters, etc. But no, You may not use it for costs that are incurred before the grant begins. No, you may not use it to buy a fancy new car unless you are doing a piece about fancy new cars and you're going to deconstruct them, and well, we'll deal with that later. No, you may not use them for tuition for school. No, you may not use them to give to gifts and friends. You may not contribute them to political causes, etc. You and the foundation have to be able to say every dollar we spent advanced my career, advanced my artistry, advanced my professional development in some terrain I'm that way. Basically then, in addition though, we know that you are working in new ways. Part of the reason we're giving this grant to individuals and not to organizations is that we heard a lot of artists say, as much as I love nonprofits, a lot of the work I want to do isn't going to land in a nonprofit. I don't need a nonprofit partner. I want to produce in a different kind of partnership. So then rather than giving this money to nonprofits where you sort of fall into that structure, we're giving the money to artists. And these are individual grants that go to artists, not to LLCs, not to organizations, but directly to the artists. That said, we also know that it's a value to have a longer-term relationship with nonprofits. So in addition to the $40,000 that every artist will receive, every artist will be able to direct an additional $10,000 to a nonprofit where they have a partnership, unless it's their own nonprofit, to strengthen or bring new resources to the table. You know, Daniel called this the New Possibility Fund. So if you're being presented by Roulette and you want to do a more audience outreach, you can come to Roulette with resources at the table and say, I can bring money to help that happen, that I can help drive money to this organization because we're in partnership. Let's expand how we're working together. Let's deepen how we're working together. Jerome will help us do that over the period of time. And if for some reason you don't have a partnership during the time, if you're a writer, because we do fund writers, and you're going to say, I'm just going to write for 2 years, you can direct that to a nonprofit that helped you get to this point. So you can say, you know, they got me here. I really owe them. Help them with their other work with other emerging artists. So that's the additional $10,000 for organizations. Assuming the markets hold, and that's a dangerous assumption, but assuming the stock market and the financial markets stay solid, because we give a percentage of our assets, as all foundations do, we intend to give 10 fellowships each in each of 6 fields. So 10 dance fellowships, 10 literature, 10 new media, including film, 10 music, 10 theater, and 10 visual arts. The deadline for applying for these is March 8th of 2018, and we will not announce these until April of 19, and that's almost a year. And I'm going to be really frank with you. I'll tell you why. We have a staff of 3 people, and we don't know if we're going to get 150 applications or we're going to get 8,000. And we just can't commit to a fast turnaround with our lean staff. If we can get answers easier, we will, but in the absence of that, yes, please. The deadline is May. Yeah, May 8th of this year is the deadline to apply. The grants are announced almost a year later, and then the money begins to flow May 1st of 19. Okay? And what we also hope, though, I'll get back to this in a second. What we also hope is that will give artists who get the money time to think about how they want to use the money. So here's the application. The application is, A, you must apply as an individual, or you may apply as a collective or an ensemble if and only if all of the following criteria apply. Number one, all members of the collective meet all the individual requirements. So all the members of the collective have to be considered emerging or early career artists. All of them have to be residents of New York or Minnesota. If you have an ensemble and Willem Dafoe is performing with you this regularly, that's great. As a collective, you can't come in the door. Secondly, the collective that is applying is the exact same individuals who created the work that is being submitted as the work samples. So the panel can say, this is the group that made this work, and this is the group that's going to continue working together in the future. So the past composition and the future composition need to be identical. And that the collective is generating original new work. Any collective that gets a grant and then loses one of their members, we don't fund the replacement. We simply downsize proportionally the grant in the year that it's lost, okay? So if you get 20,000 one year and there are five of you and it shrinks to four, the grant shrinks by a fifth. There are three basic features in the application. Number one, your bio and your resume. And you're gonna hate this, and I apologize for it. This is the most hateful part of the whole application. We're asking you not to upload this, but to fill out a template. And again, let me just tell you why. As many times as in recent years we've said, in the film program, for example, in your resume, please tell us what you did on the film, the running time of the film, and the year the film was released. We would get resumes that would say, I am an actor, editor, director, and filmmaker, and here are all the films I've ever collaborated in. And the panel would go, we have no idea what they did on any film. We don't know how long these films are. We don't know when they were made. And a lot of potentially worthy artists were falling by the wayside because the resume formats were so inconsistent that the panels couldn't judge them. By asking you to upload into a template, we're helping you make sure that you don't forget to submit a piece of information that the panel needs in order to give you support. So we've got a template format for that, and I know it's extra work, and I apologize. In that bio and resume, you'll also have the opportunity, as I mentioned before, to say, and this is why I think I'm emerging. Secondly, you'll have work samples which vary specifically by discipline. So every discipline has its own discrete limitations or requirements around the work samples, but in general, if you're in performance, it's 10 minutes of video or 10 minutes of music, it's 10 minutes of performance. If you're in film, it's 10 minutes of film. If you're in writing, it's 15 pages of writing. And if you're in visual arts, it's 10 images. And then the third part of the application is questions. Now, we're not asking you for an artist statement. We're asking you instead four very specific questions, and here they are. Question number one is, why are you an artist? Why are you an artist? Describe your work quickly, but why do you want to do this? The second question is, when you look at your own work, where do you take special pride and think, boy, my work's really strong in this way? And where do you look at your own work and say, boy, if I'm going to bring it to the next level, here's where I need to pay some attention. You know, I know I need to work in this direction. The third area is, tell us about a time you presented your work to the public and how that encounter either confirmed your direction or it changed your direction. And then the fourth question is, if somebody gave you money, what would you try to figure out? What is it that sort of is obsessing that you would be trying to come to grips with? That's the whole application. Please notice, we are not asking you for a project. We are not asking you for a project budget. We are not asking you for an aesthetic statement. That was a term that many artists felt like, I don't even know what that means. We're asking you questions that help a panel understand, is this an emerging artist that we have confidence in, that this is an optimal time to invest in? And that's what this is designed to do. Basically, after the award is announced, we'll be working with you. Before you get the money, you'll have to give us a plan to say, basically, in this next year, with $20,000, I think I'll spend $7,000 to travel for research. I'm going to spend $4,000 on equipment. You have to give us that plan, but at the application stage, there's no project. And again, we'll be very flexible with your plans. The only other requirement is, for the two-year grant, you have to stay committed to a career as a vocational artist. If you decide midway through your first year you want to go back to school, if you decide you're going to be a priest, if you decide you're going to MBA school, again, God bless. We don't begrudge you the money we've spent so far. But at least at that point in time, we need to say, then we can't continue forward. And that same requirement continues as well geographically. You need to say, I'm either staying in New York, or I'm staying in Minnesota, or I'm moving from Minnesota to New York, or I'm moving from New York to Minnesota. That's okay, but you got to stay in one of those. And when we say you're staying, we mean that's your legal address. Filmmakers, we know you're on location 7 months a year. It's not that you have to physically be present, but it's your legal address, and the easy answer is, what state did you file your taxes in last year? It needs to be, you either need to file New York City taxes or Minnesota taxes in order to meet the geographic requirement. Let me see what I've left out, if anything. I think that's probably it. Before I open up to questions, two things that we've been asked a lot, or three things. Number one is, if I'm currently supported in a Jerome program, can I apply? The answer is yes. If you are current with all requirements in that program, so if you're up to date on all of your reports, and knowing that you cannot use the money in the fellowship for the same project you're supported on in the other program. Okay, so just looking ahead. So if you've got a commission from Roulette and you get a grant from us, you can use it to travel for your next piece, to begin working on your next piece, to begin to buy equipment. You can't also use that money for the Roulette commission. That's called double dipping in the grants making world. So that's question number one. Question number two that we often get is, are these going to be renewable? We don't know. I'm being real frank with you. And you may ask me questions in a minute that I'm not going to know the answer to. We don't know because we don't know how many people are going to step forward for this. It's possible we'll say, no, it's once in a lifetime, and it was great. We may say, no, you can come back. We may say, we're going to take some of the money and reserve it for people who got a first grant, and the next time you get a grant, maybe it's for half as much. So it's a kind of winnowing support a little bit. You got $40,000 the first time, then you get $20,000. Then we're probably going to say goodbye. That's just a decision that has yet to be reached. But I would urge you to think, if I'm not confident that I have significant time to spend on this grant and to take full advantage of it at this moment, knowing that it may not be renewable and it may not come again, you may want to sit back and not apply this round. So just think that through. And then the third question, of course, is it taxable income? Yes, grants are taxable income to individual artists. And especially in this tax code, in this administration, I don't pretend yet to understand what that means. It means different things for different disciplines. Visual artists, you have some opportunities that performing artists don't have right now in tax deductibility. But just know, it is taxable income. And again, as you think about it, I always just say to people, mentally, as you're thinking about what might you do with that money, I just mentally say, deduct a third of it. Don't think about what am I going to do with $20,000 a year. Think, what am I going to do with $13,000 a year? Because the government's going to want six of it. So, roughly, you know, and that way you won't overextend yourself. Finally, the last thing that anybody will also tell you is, if you are in arrears to the government, if you owe back taxes, the government will take the funds and we can't give them to you. So if you're in arrears with your back taxes, especially if this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, clear up your taxes first if you can before you come to us, because if the government sees your Social Security number and you owe them money, they take it. Yep, it's one of those fun facts. Okay, that's basically the Cook's tour very quickly of what the program is. So we can answer questions and stay here as long or as little as you want. I would only ask that if you have questions, since I assume not everybody knows everybody else, you just tell us who you are and what kind of work you do, so we can all appreciate that. So who might have a question? Yes, please. Great. Yeah.
I have
a few regarding the eligibility for students.
So I am a DNA
student.
I turned 10 years between.
Hello.
Yeah. So I'm a DNA.
Isn't it like karaoke suddenly?
Could it be? It's a great space for karaoke.
Yeah.
I'm a DMA student, but I took 10 years between degrees, so I have work outside of academia.
Yep.
But I am currently a student, so can I still apply for this opportunity?
Here's what you're going to run into with the panel. I'm going to be real honest. And if you guys want to know how panels work and what goes on behind closed doors, I'll tell you everything. But ultimately, when panels are looking at work at a certain point in time, and in virtually every discipline, they're going to want to see work samples from at least two different works, and depending on your discipline, possibly a snippet of a work in progress, okay, but maximum. When they have so much work that's been created recently, it's hard for them to prioritize work that was done years ago. And when it comes to student work, the panels go, we don't know if that's what they do on their own. We don't know how much of this is theirs versus shaped by a faculty. We don't know how much of this was shaped by their classmates. We don't know how much of this was they did it because of an assignment. So student work is not eligible to submit as a work sample or work you created during your student years. And then depending on how long ago that was, if you're submitting older things, it's just harder for the panel to feel confident that they know where you are now. You know, because in an odd way, you're going to show them things you did before you learned what you learned in school. And that may not be reflective of where you are right now. So it may be just I need to sit this one out, and I'll come back the next round. And I should have said this, we're offering fellowships, we're alternating applications to organizations with applications to artists. So artist fellowship deadlines will always be an even numbered years, 18, 20, 22, 24. Organizational deadlines will be an odd number of years, 17, 19, 21, 23, et cetera. So yeah.
And there's no way to specify, I mean, in some cases, I think work is quite obviously not part of school homework. You know, if you have a piece that's on tour with a notable ensemble.
You know, I wish I could say that you could do it, but we've just gotten so much, you know. Yeah, we've just gotten in hot water before, especially with collaborators who've each claimed a work was theirs, and the other one didn't do anything. Excuse me, didn't do anything, and so we just had to draw the bright line and say, no, it's got to be post-student. Yep. Sorry. Yes. And you are?
Sorry, I'm Stevie. I'm a dance and music and textile art. Yeah, I'll grab the other microphone. Since we got them. My name's Stevie. I am a dance and music and performance and textile and filmmaker. I do a lot of different things. Yep. And my question is, can we only apply to one category?
Yep.
And then do we need to submit work samples that are only of the category in which we're applying?
Okay, if any of you know anybody who came to the other meeting I did a couple years ago, please tell them that I gave them the wrong answer on this. So here's the right answer. You're going to get the right answer. The right answer is the application asks you to declare that you are a multidiscipline artist. It asks you to identify what's the primary discipline that you wish you would be reviewed by, but it also asks you to identify the other disciplines in which you have significant practice. So there's a place you can register, this is sort of where I am. Basically what we're going to do is we're going to recruit the panels to fit the multidiscipline profiles of the applicants. So we're sure that we've got that. We were reluctant to say, yeah, you can submit 5 applications because we thought, okay, if we get 2,000 applicants and they're each submitting 5, we're toast. You know. So yes, we do ask you to submit 1. I should also have said, if you are applying as a collective, I should have said this not German to your question, every collective member needs to submit an individual resume or bio, but every question is one answer, it's speaking for the collective as a whole. So question 1 about why are you an artist, the collective comes up with an answer. If you're 5 different artists, we don't want 5 answers about why, because you're coming as a collective. But yes, to your question, primary discipline, identify your others, and that's why. Yes.
Hi, I'm Marta, and I am in film. And I'm wondering, let's say I'm applying as a director. I also have like writing samples as well. Which would you prefer, probably the film samples?
Film samples. I should say film and media. We have a program called film media, film video digital production. That will continue to be offered in the off years. So in the odd years, you can still apply for that. That's money to make a specific film. And in that requirement, you do have to submit the first 10 pages of a screenplay. So that's part of the application for that. But that's around a project. And again, this is about unrestricted money. And again, if you had a film project grant, you could also get a fellowship, but you couldn't use it for the creation of that film. Again, it would have to be something different. Okay. Yes, please.
Hi, my name is Mbal, and I'm a visual artist, and I wanted to ask if there is a place, if with my images there is text that has to go with them. Is there a place to put it together, because you just said 10 images?
Yeah, there's a company, again, I don't remember, if you go on our website, you'll find the guidelines for the program. You'll also find the guide for applying, and again, each discipline is different. But there is accompanying text that goes with the images to contextualize them. I don't remember how long it is. I don't remember the details, but there is a place to contextualize. Yeah. Yes, please.
Hey, I'm Andrew. I'm also a filmmaker. And I just noticed on the application that you ask about like work that's been exhibited. And I guess given the kind of year-long process, there an opportunity, say, work, you know, that's in festival submission, gets into some place that is significant? Do you, like, update the application? Does that matter to you guys?
We don't update applications. Again, we just don't have the capacity to do it. I should have said this, too, about literature. Work can be self-released, so you can self-publish, you can release on YouTube. You know, it has to have gone before public. However, you also, one of your credits needs to be someone else presented you or exhibited for you. So it could be a small festival, it could be Roulette's having a film night, they put you on here, et cetera. So one of your two credits has to be someone else putting you in front of an audience, but the other could be if you get your own YouTube channel or whatever. You can do it that way. Yeah, but you have to have two. Work still in the pipeline would count as the work in submission, or the work in progress, if you wanted to include that as part of your third sample. Yes, please. And you already have a mic. That was really good.
I brought my own.
Oh, never travel without one. Yeah.
I'm Sean. I work in animation and video.
Okay.
So at the conclusion of the fellowship period, is there a requirement for an exhibition, presentation, community engagement, social discourse kind of component?
No, we would be delighted if you did that, and if that's one of your ambitions, certainly you do that. But again, this is about what you need to move yourself forward, and if an exhibition isn't what you need, why would you spend your money on something you don't need? I mean, in an odd way, I know this is sort of, grants are so project-driven that it's hard to sort of divorce yourself and say, really, I don't have to do a project, I can really focus on what I need. You know, the question that sometimes we're asking people to think about is, if I thought I had 2 years of money to figure something out, and assuming that I'm not going to have a grant, let's assume for right now it's only once. So what's going to be different in my creative or professional life in year three, day one? If I've just made two more films, great. We don't begrudge that at all. But this is an opportunity to really invest in yourself. And to say, I really need to figure this out. I need to go travel. I need to do research. I need to pay a mentor to help me. This is what I need so that I'm just not at square one again when 2 years are gone. And again, if you want to do an exhibit, if you want to do community interaction, we are thrilled you use our money to do that. But there are many artists who will say, this is an opportunity, and that's not what I want to use that money for. So it's an option. It's not a requirement. What you do have to provide to us, you do have to provide us at the end of the first year a report that just says, here's what I've done to date, and yes, I'm continuing to do this. Yes, I still live in Minnesota or New York, or I'm moving from one to the other, but whatever. And then at the end, you have to say, here's how I spent the rest of the money. And here, so it's a narrative report and then accounting for the money. But we don't need receipts, but we need a statement from you that says, here's where the money went, and here's what I did. And we would be thrilled, probably, if you would also say, and this is why this was a good program for me, or this is why this is really so screwed up, and you guys should really rethink this whole thing. You know, so to help us understand how to do it better, frankly. Yeah. Do you have a follow-up?
But there's not a strict audit at the conclusion of the program?
No, but you better have your receipts in case the IRS audits you.
Sure.
Because this is taxable income, so you get a 1099 when you get our money. And now here's the other thing that we say to think about. You have to take $20,000 in each of our fiscal years. So, and fiscal years and calendar years are different. Our fiscal year is May 1st to April 30. So we say to the artist, think this through. You can ask for $20,000 on December 20th, or you can ask for it on January 10th, and that's going to make a big difference in your taxes. Or you can ask for $5,000 in one calendar year and $15,000 in the other. But you need to think that through, because if you ask for money and don't have an offsetting business expense you can tie to it, the government's going to say that's personal income. And then you're going to get hit with a bigger tax bill. And again, with the new tax codes, I'm not pretending to understand how much of this is even deductible. But you need those receipts in case you are audited. We just need your statement saying this is what I did and this is my accounting. Yep. Yeah, back there. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, please.
Well, actually, my name is Sharon, and I'm in film. And
lots of film people.
I'm sorry?
Lots of film people.
Yeah, that's my lord. But if you have a shift in focus,
yeah.
Because I'm interested in screenwriting, but I'm also interested in documentary film.
Yep.
And during the period, it would be exploratory of both.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know how, like, genre-specific the filmmaking category or any sort of...
Yeah, our programs, we typically say we support four genres in film. We support narrative, animation, experimental, and creative documentary. The four workplaces we work. What I would say to anybody for any grant application is the work samples you provide, you want to give the panel the confidence that what you're trying to figure out, you're the right person to figure it out. That this is, they can see, oh, this is what she wants to do. Let's look at her work. Oh, I can see that. When an artist makes a shift, what we tend to say is, in the statement that accompanies your work sample, you need to tell the panel what to look for. So you need to say, you know, I've been doing animation, and or I'm going to use another, I've been doing narrative film, but now I'm going to do experimental, but look at how I work with actors in the narrative, and that should give you confidence that when I move in this terrain in documentary, this is how that's going to tie to that. So you guide the panel if you're making a shift, because otherwise they'll go, she wants to be an experimental filmmaker. It's all narrative. How are we supposed to know? You have the opportunity to lead them.
But it's allowable within the 2 years of time to shift genre. And
oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that you would say in the what are you trying to figure out, look, I know that I'm in a moment of transition. I'm at this moment where this is what I'm trying to figure out. This is a perfect kind of opportunity for you to do that, potentially.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, back there.
Hi, I'm Lucy. I'm a musician. Could you tell me one more time the categories that I got mixed media, film, dance?
Dance, new media including film, music, literature, theater, visual arts.
Okay, so what if you're devising work, but you don't necessarily have a collective, but you're interested in shifting from kind of like a hierarchical model, like composer-performer, into more of like a devised model in your definition of who's generative, like, could you apply saying like I'm interested in this kind of work in music without saying like I'm generative?
Yeah, I mean, again, you would apply as an individual, you wouldn't apply as a collective because you don't have the work samples of that generative unit yet. So you would apply as an individual. You would say in terms of what am I trying to figure out, I'm trying to move into this terrain. And then in your work samples you'd say, here's what I'd like you to listen for in my work samples, and here's where I think we should have some confidence that this is going to be a good direction for me. But absolutely, you should be able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. I'm really making you run. It's me, I go back and forth, and meanwhile, you're doing like the 50-yard dash. I apologize.
Hi, my name is Dylan. My name is Craig, I'm a filmmaker. I'm just wondering about the 10-minute work sample.
Yeah.
So, I have probably like 3 or 4 films since I graduated, short films, and I'm wondering what kind of guidance you would give someone in my situation about how to construct that sample, because I probably couldn't put even a whole film in. You know, they're like 15 minutes long,
right?
Something like that.
Yeah, you need when you supply the work samples, tell the panel if you're submitting something longer, you need to assume they're going to watch a total of 10 minutes. And so I think I'm right, because this is what we've been doing, but you may go online and find out that I'm wrong about this. Historically, what we've done is we've said, if you're sending us 15 minutes worth of film, tell us when to start watching and when to stop. You know, so you can say, it's a 15-minute film, I want you just to cue it up if you could, but I want you to start watching at 3 minutes, 18 seconds, and watch to 6 minutes and 10 seconds. So you're directing them where to work. Ultimately, what the panels are looking for is they're looking to see what's the level of artistic accomplishment. And for any discipline, you want to show them work that you feel represents your work at its strongest. And you want to direct them to that work, because that's the first thing they're looking at, is what's the merit of this artist? You know, how strong is the work? So always lead with your strongest suit. That's why we say typically only put in a work in progress as a third piece, if at all, because often works in progress, they're not finished enough to tell the panel what you're capable of. and you want a panel to walk away feeling like, wow, look at what they can do. So it's your choice to show the panel this, you know, that question about where do I think my work's really strong? Even with my own work, where in these films do I take special pride? And they do want to see samples from at least two different pieces. So two different films, totaling 10 minutes. Now you could say I'm going to split that 5 and 5. I'm going to split it 3 and 7, you know, in terms of because of where you think the strengths are in the film, so you don't have to divide that equally. But you do want to make sure that you feel totally confident about the quality of what you're showing. Does that help? Yeah.
So is it has to be at least 10 minutes or it's exactly 10 minutes?
The panel will watch 10 minutes total.
Total.
So you have to guide them which 10 minutes. And if you don't tell them, they're going to start at the beginning of the film and watch until they lose interest. And maybe that means they've got 1 minute left over for the next film. And if you thought the second film sample was the stronger, they didn't even get to see it because they spent all their time on the first sample not knowing you wanted them to really only spend a couple minutes in the first, and then you really wanted them in the second. So there's a point you'll identify the cueing of what they should see.
Does it make sense?
Everything's submitted through Vimeo, I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Does it make sense to just do like a 10-minute, make your own work sample and just upload?
You can do that if that's easiest, if that's easy for you. Now, the one thing I will say to dancers, especially dancers, if there's any dancers here, please do not send a promo reel. Please do not send a clip reel. It backfires every time. Because really what a panel in dance wants to see is, how do they control space? How do they control silence? How do they control architecture of time? How do they respond to music? And often you see a promo reel with one soundtrack overlaid over four different pieces and little snippets from five, and the panel goes, oh, we don't even know, we can't tell any of those things. We don't know what the architecture is. We don't know how they respond to music. So don't send promo reels. Similarly, don't send for film if you've got the equivalent of a trailer. Don't send it for the same reason. They want to see, how do you work with actors? How is it that you, where does silence enter into your work? What's the architecture and the arc of your scene work? And if it's all, they just go, we don't know what we're looking at, you know, and it's hard for them to make the case. So show them 10 minutes in its integrity, not 10 minutes of things clipped together. If it's easier for you to put that all in one, you know, 5 minutes here, 3 minutes there, uninterrupted, great. Yep, please.
Would you look at the visual art
for each image, or do you look at two at a time? The panel with visual artists will, panels in visual arts typically look at the portfolio of 10, they look at artist by artist. So they say, okay, artist number one, let's look at the 10 slides. Artist number two, let's look at the 10 slides. Artist three, et cetera.
No, yeah, but from the 10 slides, do you watch them one by one, or you watch them?
Oh, yeah, one by one. Yeah, yeah. They flash it. Here's image one, here's image two, here's image three. The question we sometimes get is, especially for sculptors, can I have multiple images of the same work because it's 360 degrees? Yes, you can, but you need to apportion that within your 10 images. Similarly, some people say the installation concept is so critical to my work. Can I have one of my pictures that's the installation? We say yes, but, and the but being this, many of the panelists are doing the work at home in front of a computer screen. They're not looking at it on this. They're looking at it on a computer screen, and depending on the shot, if it's so little they can't see, you've wasted one of your images. So make sure that your images are scaled appropriately to computer viewing. Yeah.
Brett Summers, Indie Classical Composer. And my question is, if I've done a bunch of performances that weren't paid, does that count as that reason to performance?
Yep. If they have been presented to an audience, and if you feel they're reflective of your occasional work, there are a lot of artists who, I come from the theater field. There are a lot of theater companies that deliberately do no charge, no ticket ever. You know what I mean? So Shakespeare in the Park is free for everybody. That doesn't mean that it's not vocational and high quality, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, the fact that there was not an admission charge is not an issue. If the issue is, are you as an artist on a vocational path, and is this work emblematic of what you consider your highest level vocational work to be?
And there's no, is there any type of requirement in terms of there had to be a program description or anything official? I could just say I performed here.
We will ask you, and when you upload the template, you'll say, I performed this piece at this venue on this date, and it was a musical composition of 47 minutes or 2.5 minutes, so you'll give us a sense of time.
Okay, time, and yeah. In my case, most of it was improvisation, so that's fine as well.
Yep, that's fine. Yep, we fund improvisational artists in music, we fund them in dance as well. Yep. Yep. Yes.
Over here.
Okay.
Hi.
Maybe I should just let you do this. You just start delivering mics, and then I'll be surprised. Hello. Yeah.
Hi. I'm Noah. I'm a musician, and I'm curious if the recorded music that I have so far, at this moment, represent the older stuff, and I have new scores that are not recorded yet, and I might not be able to record it until May. So I'm wondering, should I upload those scores and say this is the direction that I'm heading? Is this an option at all, to upload scores or only recordings?
I don't remember. I'm being totally honest. I know that there's recording. I know in one of our past music programs, we did allow people to submit printed scores. I just literally don't remember. If you go to the guide and the application and look under music, because the requirements of work samples are presented discipline by discipline. So just go to the music section and you'll find the answer. I apologize.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
I'm Tom from film and painting.
Yep.
The question I have is, if you've got a degree and you spent years working at stuff, is it allowable to then take a class on non-matric, like a month-long class?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When we say student work, we mean that you're enrolled in a full-time degree-seeking program. In a lot of disciplines, if you're a dancer, you probably take class for 40 years after you. So depending on your discipline, having class will always be part of your ongoing work. That's not the issue. It's full-time degree-seeking programs. Yep. I'm sorry. I should have said that earlier. Yes. Yes, and now you need there are equations. So, and frankly, I should have said this earlier too, in the answers to the questions, there are, there's an equation of, I think it's 1 minute of video is, or 3 minutes of video is equal to a page or something like that. So if you get to the point you can say basically, I feel like I represent myself better on camera than I do in the written word, you can respond to those questions on video. And in the same way, there are some things in the requirements about if you're moving into this kind of clip, it counts for this many images. I'm being very, this is what happens when the guidelines get written. We haven't had the first panel yet, so, but it's in the guideline. It's in the application guide. Yep.
Hi. I'm right here.
Oh, thank you. I was like, where's that voice coming from?
I'm yes. Bethany.
Hi, Bethany.
That was basically my question.
Yeah.
Because I have different mediums, multimedia, and I would want to submit some video, some still, some they're performative. So.
You have the option to submit a melange.
Okay.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Jessica, and I'm a musician.
Hi.
And I was just wanting to get clarity on the work sample one more time.
Yeah.
It's only two works, or it's two clippings?
Which discipline are you in?
Music.
I believe it's two works.
Okay.
Samples from two works.
Okay.
And if you have a work, I shouldn't say that. Look and see if music is set up to take a work in progress or not. I'm not confident.
And but, work in progress, like, meaning the quality of what you're putting out, like the production isn't that high, or you mean the work is not complete?
The work is not complete.
So I'm sure that you would advise that we have the highest quality production value.
Yes. I will say, however, that the panels are composed of people who are from the field and are able to appreciate, I mean, as you all know, are able to appreciate the limitations of mechanical reproduction and are able to sort of see through that in a way a general public may not. So you have a sympathetic viewer from the field, but it always serves you better to have a good sample than a weak one. I mean, in terms of quality of reproduction. Yeah.
Okay. And the other question was, the panel is only looking there. They're not researching you and looking at your websites and all that.
The panel relies entirely on what you tell them.
Okay.
They do not go to websites. They do not do additional research, et cetera. So you really need to think strongly about what case you're making, because that's what they're going to rely on. You know, the only variant to that is it is considered okay if just by accident they've seen your work somewhere else. You know, that they're not supposed to divorce themselves from that, but barring that, it's just what you said. Can I say, things are just crossing my mind, if you are, especially in a form where you are in the tape in some way, maybe you act in your own films that you're directing, maybe you dance in your own pieces, you're choreographing with other people, it's always please identify which one you are. I mean, it's funny how often we get work samples and people say, I'm dancing in this piece, and the panel's going, well, which one is she? Or which one is he? You know, there are four people up there. Which one are we supposed to watch? So just make sure that you, if we are looking at you, you tell us which one you are. Yes. Oh, sorry. I'm not, the mic. It's just reflex. It's just reflex. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
My name's Mariah. One is pertaining to the advice you gave in terms of not sending in trailers as work samples. Would you say that also applies to documentary film?
Yes.
Do you have any general advice for work samples in documentary film? It sounds like you look for artists that are kind of pushing the genre a little bit. So do you only look for docs that are non-traditional or experimental? Or
you know, in documentary film especially, and now I'm going to talk about two different programs. The panel often, I don't mean this as pejoratively as it's going to sound, if in format and in substance and in style it resembles a PBS special, the panel just sort of goes like, well, you know, how are they really helping us sort of expand the notion of either the subject, the topic, or the way the work is being made. So yeah, on some level you want to show that you're stepping beyond the conventional in some way, if that makes sense. I would also say in terms of if you're applying in the film media program, if you are doing a documentary, the panels do want to know how you have made a relationship with the group you're about to document or how you intend to do that. Because they're very sensitive to sort of cultural voyeurism about we're going to swoop down on a community, stand from the outside, shoot for a week, and then be gone, and pretend it's their life story. So there are questions in documentary about, you know, what's your relationship with the group you're going to do? What's your setup for this? And if you don't have that yet, how are you going to develop that? And why should the panel have confidence you can develop that relationship? But that's in the film media programs that you would apply for in the odd years if you chose to do so.
And do you have any idea how many applications you expect to get?
We have no clue. I mean, I will tell you for the film video program and the Minnesota program this last year, because we gave those grants, we had approximately between 400 and 500 applicants. And those are around specific films, you know, that I've got a film I want to make. And in that program, we don't fund pre-production. We don't fund post-production. So you have to be like, I figured all that out, and I'm getting ready to shoot. So you're at that stage. This could generate more because this isn't project tied in that way. And again, assuming the market's hold, we anticipate giving 10. Yeah, 10 in film. Yeah.
For dance specifically,
yes.
Oftentimes the documentation of a performance is lousy.
Yep.
And rehearsal footage might show the work much, much more clearly. Would it be acceptable to submit rehearsal footage of a performance? Like, do you need to submit, does the work sample need to be of the performance when the work was performed, even if it's you have better quality of rehearsal?
That's an interesting question. I would say you don't want to send a tape of the rehearsal process. You don't want to send a version of of a rehearsal that actually then was different than the final public performance. But if it's the same and the quality of the documentation is better, I don't see why not. I mean, I would just note this is a rehearsal, but it was in the final form, and because the documentation is better, that's why I'm sending it to you in this rather than the other. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Yvonne, and I'm a multidisciplinary artist, time-based. So I this succinctly. So the vast majority of my body of work is made in live arts. I'm a director. And throughout my body of work, I have used new media and film in a very kind of integrated way. For the last few years, I have been working on my first feature film. It is now almost finished. It's in a pretty good completion phase, but it has not been released. It has not been shown at any festivals just yet. So my question is, and I know you haven't had a panel yet, you know, with this area, so I don't know if you can really kind of give me an informed answer, but if you could kind of venture a guess, would you say that it would be beneficial for me to talk about that and possibly include a clip from that film? Or do you think the panel is going to say he hasn't emerged in this particular field?
It depends on which discipline you're applying in. If you're applying in film and you have not completed your first film yet, the panel would say,
no.
Not there yet.
No, I mean, yep. I would apply in theater, I guess, is the one that kind of is most closely aligned.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess I'm just wondering, you know, like from my point of view, I would think that it could be interesting, you know, for panelists to kind of see, like, well, here is somebody who's been working in live arts with this kind of media component and film component, and this is like kind of like this something that's kind of beginning to evolve into a kind of a distinct form and kind of moving into a different discipline. But I don't know whether they would find that confusing or would consider it kind of a minus, you know.
No, I don't think so. I mean, again, the work samples you would send us are from completed work, so they would show your past work. But again, remember the fourth question is, if somebody gave you money, what would you be trying to figure out? That's the whole purpose of this. How do we help you take the next step in your development? And that would be the place in that narrative that you would talk about, while this is the work, here's where I am heading, and this is what I'm trying to get to. So that answer in that narrative format gives you the opportunity to lay that out to the panel.
Right, but if I'm only providing the samples from my live work, and like nothing from like how, you know what I'm saying? Like, would you encourage me to sort of include a clip from the film as well, even though it hasn't been released?
No, I would not. I would say you have to do the live. You would show the live work and rely on the narrative to help lay that case out.
Right.
And again, this is a guess because we haven't had the panel yet. But that knowing other panels, that's what they would look for.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Rosemary. I'm a visual artist.
Hi.
I was curious if you could explain a little bit more about how the jury is composed and how it goes through the work. Is everybody looking at it on their laptop? Is there a first round and then a second round?
Here's what we do. This doesn't mean this is what every group does or whatever. We identify a panel based on largely based on the applicant pool, and what I mean by that is the following. We want to make sure that nobody on the panel is in conflict of interest, so you can't be sure of that until you know who's applied, because you can't recruit somebody, you know. You don't want somebody sitting on the jury who's commissioned an applicant artist. Okay. Then we also pay attention to if there are any particular trends or issues in that field that warrant a particular kind of expertise. So, for example, in the film program, if for some reason one year we got no animation, we wouldn't need to have an animator on the panel. But in a year where there's a lot of animation, we'd want to make sure that there is an animator, et cetera. So, first of all, you select the panel. Panels, in our case, are typically anywhere from 5 to 7 people, depending on the size of the application. First step is the staff goes through the applications and looks only at the resumes to determine whether people are eligible. And where there is a clear yes, they go on. Where there's a clear no, if somebody says, you know, my address is Fort Myers, New Jersey, no. If somebody says, I'm just finishing my third year of my MFA, no. I mean, you know, and we get a lot of those. So there's a certain amount that we just have to weed out. Where there is a question mark, we send it to the panel and say, this is yours to call. because the staff doesn't feel comfortable making this. This is yours, and this is especially where your explanation of this is why I'm considering myself an emerging artist is going to be especially powerful. Again, I can't guarantee you the panel is going to agree with your argument, but you have the opportunity to make that argument. The panel then looks at all of the work samples, if that, or it looks at all the applications, if that's feasible. So if the total applicant pool is small enough that people can look at everything they do, if we get hundreds of applications, I mean, these are people that run their own arts organizations, they are their own artists, they can't give up 2 months of their lives to do nothing but work samples. We make sure every artist is seen by at least three different people, so every artist is seen by multiples, okay? In that process, we ask the panelists to rate, to respond numerically on criteria. And we do it very simply. We say there are three, they have numbers, if you want the numbers I can tell you, but basically the choice is an artistic merit. Is this artist extraordinary, exceptional, you're so excited, this is somebody who's really got your juices flowing? That's one score. If you say, oh, they're solid, it's okay, I mean, it's good, it's just not, for me, that's a different score. And if you say, I got some problems here, that's a different score, okay? The second they look at, I need to review what they offer this fellowship. There's a second question about, I should look back on this. I can't remember what the second criterion is. In most programs, it's about can they do the project? Are they the right people to do it? And then the third issue is this going to make a difference in their lives? You know, is this the right moment for that artist? So they're looking at your quality as an artist. They're looking at what's motivating you and pushing you along. And they're looking at whether this is optimal time. They submit numerical scores for each of those, and then they are allowed to submit a fourth score, which is a gut check. And the gut check just says, look, it's not a numerical average. You may say, look, I don't know. I'm not quite entirely sure this is the right moment, but God, if this were the right moment, this would be unbelievable. They can rate you as a, even though numeric average, that wouldn't come out that way. Does that make sense? Okay, we get all the scores back. We say, we do the averaging of the score and we make a cut. We cut it to anywhere from 20 to 25. And we then say to every panel, here's who your scores have put ahead. You're allowed to add one more name if you think we've done something really hatefully bad and you think we've really missed the boat. You can add one more name. So at most we have 25 to 30 names. And then we call the panel together in a full day meeting. And as a group, they discuss each applicant. They look briefly back at the work samples to make sure that we're all clear which artist this is. They rescore the criterion, they rescore the overall, and then there's a discussion where they basically come into an agreement about who they want to fund. In our case, which isn't always the case for organizations, we say in the first round, when you're looking at those scores, you're judging this artist, and then you're judging this artist, and then you're judging this artist one by one. But when you're coming up with the funding roster as a whole, we want you to think curatorially because we want you to think about the cohort you're putting out there and the possibility of capturing the fullest excitement and energy and diversity of the field. And if you come back at the end of the day in music and say, we're funding 10 white male jazz pianists, we'll take a deep breath and say, are you sure? Because if that's really what you believe is what, we will stand behind you in front of our board of directors and make that case. But if that's what you've come up with, have you really listened to what you've been doing? Have you been sensitive to what's going on out there? Have you really? So we ask them to think in that collective sense to get to that final group. Legally, our board of directors has to accept the panel's recommendations. So what the panel recommends at the end of the day goes to our board. The board, because it's an individual artist program, cannot, there are only two reasons the board can take somebody off. The process was violated, so we stand up and say, you know, unfortunately it came to this artist. They ended up talking the whole time about the fact that her mother was actually a good friend of somebody else. That's not a review criterion, it's who's your mother. So they made a decision for something totally that wasn't in the criterion, they can throw them out. They can also say, we don't believe this person is an emerging artist. We're the custodians of watching that thing. The panel may have bought it, we don't buy it, and they can throw them out. But at that point in time, every panel has also had to come up with a rank ordered list of alternates. And if they throw somebody out, the first alternate automatically slots in. So what the board can never do is look down the list and say, oh, I really like that artist. If I throw somebody out up here, we'll get that one in. No, no, no. They have to work down the list as it was presented to them. And when the board meets and they pass they make their decisions, they also formally reject everybody they didn't give a grant to, and then we, the next day, start making phone calls and sending letters saying, here's what happened. Is that far more information than you ever wanted to know?
That is a great answer. Do you let people know if they made it to the alternate final round? Is there different types of like rejection letters sent out?
Yeah, typically what we've done is we've said, look, here's the bottom line. You didn't make it to the last, so there's not a lot we can tell you because you weren't discussed by the panel. I mean, we can give you maybe some interpretive things to say, well, when it came to your artistic scores, that they were sort of all over the map. The panel responded to them very differently. So you may just want to, your artistic samples may not have been totally convinced. You may just want to look back at that, but we're inferring that because you got a very high score and a very low score. And so there was a mixed response. Where they've been discussed, though, we take copious notes, and we're able to say when it came to your application, if you were in that 20 or 25, here's what they said. Here's where they struggled. Here's where they agreed. Here's where they disagreed. But we can give you that if you made that round. So yes, at that level, depending on how far you got, you get a different level of feedback. Does that help? You're very welcome. Yes, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, where'd the mics go? I'm overstepping my authority left and right.
Where were you?
Yep.
Sean again.
Hi, Sean again.
I've sat in on a lot of these informational seminars.
And this was the most hateful by far.
No, I wanted to thank you for your rigorous demystification of the panel process.
Totally.
It's always been the most kind of frustrating thing. You never know who's looking at your work and what decisions are being made. If you misspelled your name and they just threw it in the trash, or if it actually made it to a final round. So this has been terrific.
Yep.
So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Before I ask my question, I have just two quick questions I want to verify.
Yeah.
So you say the panels will not be looking at your websites and doing outside research
Correct.
On your career and on your work.
Correct.
And we're not required to specify, come in with a project in mind.
There is no project. There is no project budget. No. But again, in theory, in our calendar, you will hear from us no later than March when that board meeting happens, and then we need that plan to tell us this is how I plan to spend the money. If the money starts to flow at the earliest May 1st, you got a couple months to put that together, and even so, you may say, I don't really even want the first payment till January 2nd or whatever, but there's that buffer of time. But
The problem actually is just sometimes you have, when you're not being asked to make a choice, then you have a lot of options, too many options almost of what to pick on. So. With my work, as an animator, video installation, I would say that I have kind of two pretty distinct bodies of work.
Yep.
One is more screening, single channel oriented,
yep.
kind of vocal performance, character based.
Yep.
And the other is more installation, abstract, it kind of happens in the public realm mm-hmm. a little more. Uh-huh. So if I'm trying to direct the panel to give them a full appreciation of what I'm doing and what I might do with the work, and I only have two things to choose from, do I want to focus on one body of work, or do I want to try to pick the strongest categories from the two fields?
You want to show them work that will be to give them the strongest insight into where you think you want to spend your time during the grant period. I know that sounds like an odd thing, but that question again about what would you try to figure out? You said if I had 2 years of support, I'd put all my eggs in this basket, the installation work. Then show them both installation works. If you say, no, I'm gonna spend all my time in the single channel, show them both single channel. If you say, I'm gonna keep working in both terrains in this period, then show them one of each. But you wanna help them understand, if they invest in you, what's the connect between what you've done and where you're gonna spend your time.
I can barely spend a week working on one thing, much less 2 years working on one thing.
Right. Well, and we hope that you probably do many things in the 2 years.
Okay,
yeah. But you may want to split your samples better.
That won't potentially be confusing or frustrating.
No.
Process.
And again, in that question, what are you going to spend your time with? You have the opportunity to say, I'm looking to do both, and that's why I sent you two different samples. Again, you've got that opportunity in your narrative to point them that direction. You lead their thinking. Yep.
Hi, that's sort of...
She took it. I didn't do it. I just didn't do it. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is sort of piggybacking on the previous question.
Yep.
So, as you were talking, I have two samples in mind. Mm-hmm. The first one, I was a writer on it and a producer and an actor in it. And then the second one, I was a director and an actor in it. Can I use both of them or do I have to use one?
You need to use the directing sample because, again, we don't consider editing and acting generative work. We consider that interpretive work. And this is, you need to show them your work as a director if you're applying in the film. Yeah, so you need to show them directing samples.
Hi, my name is Rachel.
Hi.
For
those of you that are leaving, I'm sorry, and thank you for coming. Thank you for giving me your time. Don't forget the cards are over there with the web address, etc. Please take extra cookies, extra Perrier's, extra mandarinos, or whatever they are. Yeah, please, yes, your question.
So I work in video, but I consider myself to be mainly an editor, because I work in archival footage,
yep,
re-editing it along with compositions to make something entirely new. But is that still interpretive work?
I could take that two ways. If you're an editor, I mean, in an odd way, if I thought what you were saying, if you're an editor that you're editing other directors' work, then I would say probably you fall outside our guidelines. If you say that, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, I'm essentially a collage artist, I'm just using other, then you are generating new work. You're just using existing film stock. Mm-hmm. Then yeah, you're okay. You're good. Yeah, if anybody hasn't seen the work at Axis downtown, where they've gotten people to make four movies based out of Wizard of Oz footage, it's really great. The film of Toto as this obsessed mad dog who protects Dorothy, so every time somebody says Dorothy, Toto goes, ah! It's one of the best 4-minute movies I've ever seen, so go down to Axis. Anyway, yeah, what else? Yeah, please.
For work samples for film,
yeah.
Is it okay if you're pulling from short films, or do they have to be featured?
No, they don't have to be featured at all.
No,
ultimately, and especially it's different on genre, as you know, a 2-hour animation is a very different prospect than a 2-hour narrative, which is a very different prospect. When we say that you need two different films of significant length, depending on whether you're experimental or animation, the total running time for those two things typically can be around 30 minutes, maybe all you've released. Whereas if you're a narrative filmmaker, you may already have already put up 4 or 5 hours. So we're very respectful of that difference. And some people in this moment will send us an entire short film because it's 4 minutes long in animation, and then a clip from something else, and that's fine because they're splitting their 10 minutes. But again, just think, they're going to look for 10 minutes total at what I'm giving them. What's my best 10 minutes?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
For the money that the artist directs to an organization, can they decide when to direct that at any point in the 2-year grant period, or is it something that they have to decide at a specific point?
There are specific deadlines within each year because if it's not going to get used, we need to know that for cash flow reasons. So it's got to get used within the 2-year period. It can't be, please give it to them a year from now. There's also there's an internal deadline about 6 months before the end of the second year that if you haven't declared by then, that's off, because we just can't deal with the cash at that point.
But an artist could, for example, spend the first year, you know, building or,
yes,
or continuing to build a relationship, yeah, with an organization.
And the artist can split the money. Each grant has to be at least $2,500. So there's a maximum of 4 different grants they could make. But they could say $7,500 to this one and $25 to this. They could say $33, $33, $33. It doesn't have to go evenly, but each has to be at least $2,500, so a maximum of 4. And especially for people who are on tour, that may be especially important to be able to say, I want to do this in each of the sites, so I want $2,500 to go to each of these 4 places because I'm touring, and that's fine.
And it's not meant to be, I don't know, a delicate way to act. Ask this, but it's not a sort of like pay to play. Like,
no,
you're not donating to be presented.
No. And at the other hand, it's also not meant to be a if you're the presenter saying, well, I don't have to pay them as much because they've got some money from Jerome. This is an opportunity fund. This is really about how do we strengthen our relationship and how do we deepen the collaboration we've got ahead. There's resources to help us make this deeper or richer. It's not to get you cheaper or to hire you and otherwise I wouldn't. That's the intention. We'll see how that plays out. It's not unlike, I guess NDP, for those of you who are in dance, there's tour money that they can help offset. It's kind of that model where the artist is making decisions about where the money goes, but it's about making it a deeper relationship. Yes, please.
Do you have to specify the nonprofit in your application?
No. No, 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 no. No, you don't. Again, no project, no project budget, no specific. That comes up once the grant is made. So, yep. Yep.
Hi, Artem. I'm a director and writer. Question, just regarding something you mentioned earlier, what are some criteria by which you figure out what is the direct connection that the artist has to the community? Because you said that's something that...
Yeah. You sort of see it in two ways. One, you can, if you know the field, you can begin to sense it by where their credits are. You get to know, so where have they been presented? Where, you know, when you said, where have you done your work? What are they? So the resume is informative of that. But remember, there's that second question about, talk to us about an audience connection specifically you had and how that affirmed or changed your trajectory. There's that moment in that question to say, here's my work with my community, within my audience. This is how that happens. And this either made me realize I was totally on the wrong track, or this has really deepened my commitment, and therefore this is how it's playing out. And frankly, you also, I think, for many people, I'm not telling you how to write your application, some of that may be apparent as well in the question about why are you an artist? You know, I mean, because there are multiple ways you might get at that, but if somebody gets to the end of your application and you haven't referenced community in your why you're an artist, or why you are about your audience interaction and it's not on the resume, then the panel's probably going to really question to say, why should we believe they have a deep community connection? We can't find it. We can't find it anywhere.
And the community that it's, the connection is to, doesn't necessarily have to be just the artistic community, like an actual
no.
Like neighborhood.
No, it can be neighborhood, it can be your local geographic area, it can be the gay community, it can be the African-American community, it can be the rural Minnesota community. I mean, your community's got so many different lenses to how that might be interpreted. It's really the artist who's going to drive what that definition means for her or him, and then makes the case about that connection. There's not a uniform, this is what it means for us.
Thanks.
Yeah. Sing out, Louise, for those of you that know Gypsy.
Okay.
Save my voice. So I have three questions.
Yeah.
The first one is, I apologize if I'm repeating a question.
No.
Can the work during the grant period, can that take place outside of New York City? You talked about touring, so that can happen outside of New York City.
Yeah, you just have to maintain your legal residence in New York or in Minnesota, New York City or Minnesota. But you can be working other places. And again, especially in film, people that are on location, they're going to be gone from those places for a significant period.
I'm a composer. That's my world. But
yep.
I've worked internationally.
Yep. Well, and we hope, actually, people will use the money to travel. You know, those of you that have known our travel study program, we're not going to continue it because, in an odd way, two things have happened lately. We found travel's gotten so expensive that people that really, especially internationally, say, I want to go immerse myself in a community, we can't cover that. And secondly, when people travel and have transformative experiences, they get home and there's no money to do anything about it. And we're saying, if we're giving you $20,000 a year, go travel, and then you've got money to do something about it when you get back. You know, so we hope people will use it to go places.
Okay.
If that's right for them. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm mostly a composer, but I've also scored film and video and worked for new media art, things like this, and music for still works. Those artists with whom I work, would they also be able to use, let's say I use the same sample as someone. Say someone I've worked with in the past, and we've both worked on a work that's very, very strong and would make a great sample for each of us. Is that a weird question?
Co-created work should not be submitted as a work sample unless you are applying as a co-creative team. So if you're saying basically, we always compose together, our work samples we compose together, and if we get this, we're going to split it and we're going to compose together. Okay, so I hope we don't hit this. Ultimately, the work you submit should be work that you generated, that you are the composer for. Not a co-composer, you are the composer in music.
But if I've scored someone's film, for instance.
They may submit a scene where we hear your score in the background, and that's fine, because that's their film.
And I can submit the film and say, I wrote the music for this.
You can only send, you need to apply in one discipline. And unless you directed the film, which it sounds like you didn't.
No. But if I want to submit the score, you know, the context is important.
It's fine. You're submitting your music composition, wherever and however it was realized.
Gotcha.
So, yep, yep.
All right.
Yep.
And then my last question.
Yep.
I think I know the answer to this, but I want to make sure.
The answer is no. Oh,
it
no.
Might be.
That's usually what that setup means about, I think I know the answer.
Yeah, I think I know the answer. I think the answer is no, but we'll see.
We'll see.
So, I'm all but dissertation in physics. A completely different field. And I plan to defend sometime in August. So it's past the deadline. Would I have to wait until 2020 to apply? More time to prepare.
Yeah. So see, the answer was yes, because you framed it as a positive question. So your answer is yes, you would have to.
Are there ever exceptions to that?
Well, this is the first time we've ever done this. So there's no history in this program, but in all the other programs, no, there's never been an exception that I'm aware of. Now, the foundation's been around for 50-odd years. I've only been with them for two. But at least in the last decade, there's not been an exception.
Okay. And this will definitely be offered in 2020?
Unless the field tells us this is a really hatefully bad thing, and please get rid of it. I mean, if we get negative response to this,
right.
You know, then we'll drop back and say, okay, back to the drawing board. This was a total waste of time and effort. We learned, you know, and that's part of the reason we keep having these conversations. We don't evaluate our programs we don't do something for 5 years and then do an evaluation to figure out it was a bad idea. We tend to have conversations on a rolling basis, and if everybody tells us, more likely what will happen is there will be refinements and tweaks and changes to make it better. So some of the requirements may slightly nudge a little bit. Some of the things around work samples may either tighten or expand. I mean, those kinds of things you get in with panels, they'll say 10 minutes was way too much, we only needed 8, or 10 minutes wasn't nearly enough, we needed 15. So those things are likely to change. The other thing that may change sometimes is the timeline, only in that once we get a handle on how many people are applying, we may say, actually, we needed the deadline earlier in the year so people get earlier notice, or we can wait a little later. So I would not assume the next deadline's in May, so don't wait until May to go on the line and then find out, oh my God, it was in April and I missed it. So, you know, at the end of 19, start visiting the website again to see what's up.
That's what I was doing last year.
Yeah.
2017, December, I'm like,
Thank you.
I'm assuming that this, you can have any other job while you're doing this.
Yeah.
And it's intended to focus entirely on this project or this whatever it is, and funding yourself and your basic living and all that.
Yeah, this is designed to give you the leg up to take the next steps in your career and professional development. And again, coming from the theater field, most actors I know are full-time waiters. You know, the fact that you've got a full-time job doing something else isn't the issue. The real question, though, is if you're doing something that is so full-time, you don't have the time to devote to this opportunity, then that's a bad choice of time to even ask for this. I mean, that's the
question. Well, the nice thing about this is that you can choose with the extra money, you can choose to find something that is low key and be able to make the ends meet with the action.
And depending on your circumstance and who you are and what your opportunities are, but yeah, you know, you may say, I can stop working and work, I can write full time for the next 5 months. Great.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna step away from my job.
Yeah, or step away and save money and then go into this and then
Yep.
And the other thing too is this program, the drone program, affiliated with the Roulette here?
Roulette is a longtime grantee of ours as an organization. As you mentioned, the commissioning or the programs for artists and emerging artists that happen here, we support them to do. And we're about to announce it probably, will be, we announce the grants once we have all the signed grant contracts from everybody. So we can't determine when that's going to be. The grantees and the organizations will find out in March if they got money or not. Depending on how fast they return the contracts to us, we'll be posting in the website probably, I would guess, in May or early June to say, here are all the programs that we're supporting at Roulette or at, in Minneapolis, for example. For the last few years, we've supported programs at Mixed Blood Theater and Penumbra Theater and the Walker. All of those will be posted to say, in addition to giving money directly to artists, here are the programs that are supporting emerging artists that we are supporting, and if you're interested in those, you should knock on their door, because you talk to them about those programs. You don't come to us. You come to us for the fellowships. You go to the organizations to explore whether there's a chance for you to work with them. But that complete list will be up May or June.
Okay, so in that kind of vein, I was wondering, so there's some type of a umbrella kind of a PR for this group, this cohort, if you will, of all these artists, so that there's kind of this, hey, look, this big umbrella of this, all of this going on, so that they get some extra advertising and kind of synergy in order to help propel each individual's art, or at least get that extra kind of eyes on the community, the world, the international, at least the United States community, to say, hey, look, this is some great stuff coming out of this fellowship.
Yeah. We will do a public announcement. How much more of that we do, I'll be real honest with you guys, is dependent on two things. One is where our investments are and how much we are worth at that point in time. And also the priority given the economic climate. I'm sure you guys have experienced this, looked in some foundations, why are they spending all this money? Why don't they just give the money to the artists? You know, they're spending so much money on all this other bells and whistles stuff. So if money's tight, it's a judgment call about, is it what's best for the artist, giving funding 12 artists instead of 10, or taking that additional money and doing a lot of big PR? And that's, we don't have an answer on that yet.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just being real honest about how things go. Anything else?
One last quick question.
Yes, please.
Can you apply as an LLC, or will you give the money to an LLC, or does that have to be an individual?
It has to go to an individual. Now, and I say has to, and please check back before May. If we find, in this round it has to go to an individual. And the reason I'm saying this is, I'll be real, again, honest. One is, when we understand the tax code better, if we thought it were better to go to the LLC, we might reframe it. But before we can reframe it, we need the IRS's approval that the program can be reframed, and the IRS... you can't get that kind of answer for them in the time frame for this program. It might be the next round would be an LLC opened, but this one, we just can't. Yeah.
Just makes it easier to, pay collaborators.
No, I know. But this program was set up as an individual artist program, and with the IRS, we're stuck with it being an individual artist program for the time being. You guys have been very generous with your time and patience. Let me just say three things in closing. Number one is the cards are over there. If you for contacts, if you have questions about the philosophy of the program or the thinking behind it, please contact. I'm going to be going on leave for a little bit, so you're not going to get me on the phone for the next month or so. Contact Eleanor. Eleanor Savage is sort of your point person about the thinking behind the program. If you're having problems with the technology, the online system, the uploading of the samples, et cetera, go to Andrea. And both of their names are on the card, but Andrea for technical help, Eleanor for sort of philosophic help on that. So that's number one. I said I was gonna say three things, I'm only remember two. The other one is just to really say to you guys, we know that we are so lucky that we have this money to give to emerging artists, because especially in this time, we think that artists need these resources, but the country needs artists more than ever. Mm-hmm. And so we are honored to do this work on your behalf, and I would please beg you, we only can do as good a work as you help us do. So as you see things about any of our programs, this included, help us think about how to make it better by telling us what you genuinely, genuinely think about these programs and whether they're good for you or not. Because it's not going to hurt our feelings. If we're not doing what's optimally best for you, we're not doing our own work. So bless you for all you do. Let us know if we can be of help, and go have dinner. Thank you all for being here.